Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, hey there, friend. Glad you made it by tonight. You know what I was just thinking? On this very day back in 1966, the Starship Enterprise set off to boldly go where no man had ever gone before. And tonight, 57 years later, the two of us are about to embark on exactly what we do every Friday. Isn't that exciting? Yeah, well, what can I say, Chester? I'm a bit of a homebody. Come on in, friend. Well, that's more like it. So smoke 'em if you got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom, friends. 'Cause the final frontier is right here at home. For our first story tonight, we welcome back Mr. Season Finale himself, W.B. Stickle. For our first tale, we join Lyle Goodman, an old man about to welcome some unexpected company. So, without further delay, I give you from author W.B. Stickle, Representations. The storm assault in Lyle Goodman's house was a good one for sure. Full of wrath, wind, and rain. Plus scads of lightning and thunder and what sounded like hail.
I hear ya,
he said at its fiercest. And for the better part of an hour, he simply sat in his favorite reading chair, listening as the torrent expended its fury. When things finally settled down, withering to a steady downpour, Lyle rose from his chair, got a fire going in a stone fireplace, and prepared himself a cup of chamomile tea. He had a familiar feeling about the storm, and if he was right about that, he was going to need as much comfort as he could possibly muster.
Maybe,
he said, returning to the living room.
A little fireside reading is in order.
Sipping his tea, he approached the fireplace and considered the two massive bookcases that flanked it. Each of the broad shelves were packed with old hardbacks, the majority of which were penned by the greats: Hemingway, Dickens, Twain, Dostoevsky, Doyle, Stevenson, and the like, with a few modern genre works scattered within. Works by King, Bradbury, McCarthy, Jackson, and so forth. Skimming over the books, Lyle's gaze stopped on Milton's Paradise Lost.
Yes,
he said with a nod.
I should think so.
He retrieved a hefty tome from the top shelf and carried it along with his tea back to his chair. After setting his teacup on the ornate tabouret table that stood next to his chair, Lyle took a seat, draped a blanket over his legs, and placed Paradise Lost face up on his lap. Despite being an older hardcover, the book did not bear an outer dust jacket. Whether or not this had always been the case, Lyle couldn't say for sure. Like a good chunk of his recollections, his memory of the day he had purchased it was badly fragmented. He knew he and his wife Nancy had been in Austin at the time, in a funky little bookshop whose name escaped him. but the rest of the details were frayed to the point of irrelevance, coalescing with the remnants of other similar memories, making it impossible to be sure anything he remembered these days was anywhere near accurate or reliable, a reality he was finding increasingly scary and immensely lonely. Per his doctor, it wasn't Alzheimer's. All of his CTs, MRIs, and PET scans had come back clean, and his beta amyloid levels were unremarkable, which he had been told was a good thing. More likely, his doc had said, it was a circulatory issue. Decreased blood flow to the brain due to his advanced age. He just needed to exercise more, rework his diet, and take his phytonutrients. Go whole food, plant-based, if he was so inclined. Lyle didn't know about all that. What he had going on upstairs felt less natural and more insidious. So, okay, maybe it wasn't Alzheimer's, but whatever it was, it had him in its enthrallment, and he didn't like how that felt.
"Quite the sad old fool, aren't you?" he said with a grunt and a shake of his head. He peered across the den to the picture of him and Nancy standing at the altar, all those years ago.
"What do you say, Nance? Is it all finally crumbling away?"
In his mind's eye, he pictured his wife's face and imagined her replying something like,
"Oh, Lyle, it's just a stupid dust jacket. Who cares if the memory is fuzzy? You still remember me vividly, don't you? Focus on that, Chicken Little, and don't worry about the sky falling."
"Easier said than done,"
Lyle countered as if she were sitting right next to him.
"It's harder and harder each day. I can feel the threads unraveling."
"That's okay, darling,"
her ghost image responded.
"That's how it goes for most. Just hold on to your memories of me, and you'll be fine. I promise."
Releasing a weighty sigh, Lau returned his gaze to Paradise Lost and lifted its front cover.
"Oh, Lord, I admit, sometimes I struggle to understand the crosses I've been made to..."
Before he could finish the thought, a raucous pounding erupted from the front door, startling him so badly he flailed in his seat and nearly catapulted the book across the room. Somehow managing to retain his grip on the thing, he pinned it securely to his lap and directed his attention to the door. A few seconds ensued, then the sound came again, harder this time, more urgent. Befuddled, Lyle shot a glance at his wristwatch, which told him it was 10:43.
"Who the heck?"
he said, trying to work out who would possibly come calling on him at such a late hour, in such dreadful weather, no less. Certainly none of his friends or family members. What few acquaintances he still had were all either confined to nursing homes or living in other states, and neither of his children would just show up without phoning him first. Supposing he had better go see who it was before they knocked the door off its hinges, Lyle set his book aside and pushed himself up out of his chair.
"Hold your horses!"
he called out to whoever it was.
"I'm coming! I'm coming!"
Reaching the door, he paused briefly to catch his breath, then put his eye to the door's small peephole. On the other side of the warped lens loomed a world of darkness. To remedy this, Lyle flipped on the porch light and looked again. This time he got an eyeful of his anxious knocker, a tall, dark-haired man in a green jacket and blue jeans. The man was hunched over and had his collar turned up against the rain. Lyle studied the man for a length, but no recognition came. Of course, with a 78-year-old brain pickled from decades of alcohol abuse, that didn't mean a whole hell of a lot. All the same, his intuition insisted it wasn't anyone he was associated with. He briefly debated trying to talk to the guy through the door, but opted instead to undo the dual bolts, keeping the chain in place, and pushed it open a crack.
"May I help you?" he said through the opening. "Evening, sir," the man replied in a raspy baritone. "My name is Howard Staley. My car ran out of gas about a quarter mile down the road."
He had his big sausage-length thumb hooked back towards Cali Road in the direction of Highway 281.
"I turned off hoping to find a gas station, but it seemed it's just houses down this way."
Lyle ogled the stranger's big dripping face, taking in his thick mustache, long scraggly sideburns, and dark caterpillar-like eyebrows.
"Indeed,"
Lyle said, thinking the fellow resembled a young Burt Reynolds.
"Nothing this way but old crazy coots like me."
The man named Howard Staley issued a polite laugh.
"Well, I hate to bother you, but I was wondering if I could use your phone to call somebody. Don't you have one of them cellulars?"
"Yes, sir. But the battery died and I neglected to bring a charger."
The big man shrugged as if to say, "What can you do?" Just then, a gust of wind and rain blasted through the opening, spraying Lyle's entire front side. Snarling at it, Lyle undid the chain, opening the door wide, and said,
"Fair enough. Best come on inside."
Accepting the offer, Howard quickly shuffled past Lyle into the house's small foyer.
"Thanks a bunch, mister," he said. "Cold one tonight, eh?" "And a wet one at that,"
Lyle agreed as he shut the door. He was garbed in a pair of beige slacks and a cashmere sweater, but he might as well have been wearing his birthday suit with how frigid it was out there.
"Didn't realize Texas got cold like this,"
the big man said.
"Is this typical for this time of year?"
By time of year, he meant autumn. Lyle ran a palm down his face, wiping off the rain that had just blasted him through the door opening.
"Not this far south, no. The Channel 6 weather folks say all this is a result of an unusual cold front moving in from Canada."
"So much for global warming, huh?"
Lyle let out a friendly chuckle, then flitted a dismissive hand at the comment.
"I've long since given up trying to understand the planet's endless idiosyncrasies."
He almost said more, but he was abruptly distracted by Howard's sopping wet clothes.
"My word, it looks like someone just fished you out of the Colorado River. Let me get you a towel."
Lyle motioned to the coat rack that stood next to the front door.
"In the meantime, hang your jacket there if you like. Name's Lyle, by the way."
Before his guest could respond, Lyle disappeared into the half-bathroom beneath the staircase and grabbed two green towels. When he re-emerged with them seconds later, he found the man in the process of hanging up his jacket.
"Here you go,"
Lyle said, handing him a towel.
"Thanks again, Lyle,"
Howard said as he dabbed his head and neck several times. He glanced down at his jeans, which were damp from stem to stern.
"Yeah, it got me pretty good."
After giving himself a swift pat-down, Lyle pointed at a pair of saloon-style doors to his right.
"Those lead to the kitchen. The phone is back there. It's a landline, as I don't own a cell. Got a phone book around here somewhere, too."
"That's okay,"
Howard said, fishing a small white card from his pocket.
"Got my AAA card right here. It has the number. May I then?"
"By all means."
With a nod and a friendly wink, the larger man strode through the saloon doors into the kitchen. Lyle watched the doors rock shut behind him. As they stilled, he was overwhelmed by a familiar feeling, one he had felt dozens of times over the years.
one that always signaled the onset of bad things. When he was done with his call, Howard rejoined Lyle in the dining room.
How long did they say it'd be?
Asked Lyle. The big man flashed an irritated sneer and slipped the AAA card back into his pocket.
At least 3 hours. Seems they've got their hands full tonight. Big surprise. Hopefully they weren't serious about the wait. But if so, I'll manage. Always have a few books with me in the car.
Smart man. Books are a lifeline to our imaginations.
Howard smirked and headed toward the coat rack.
Sounds like one of those the more you know spiels.
Very well might be,
Lyle conceded. He watched Howard approach the coat rack and reach for his jacket. As he did, he all of a sudden found himself frowning and wanted inexplicably to keep the man there a little while longer.
Wait a second, Howard. You don't have to go just yet.
The big man looked back at him and raised an inquisitive eyebrow.
Just listen to that rain,
Lyle went on.
Goodness, it's really coming down again. It wouldn't be right for me to send you packing like this.
That's awfully kind, Howard said. But using your phone was a big help. More than that seems like an imposition.
Don't be ridiculous. You'd only be sitting in your car all alone. Why not stay for a while? Get dry and warm before you head back into that typhoon.
Howard set his eyes on the front door. On the other side of it, wind screeched like a dying animal, and rain chattered relentlessly.
Does sound pretty nasty, he acknowledged.
It does,
Miles said.
Now come on over to the table and take a load off.
You sure?
Howard peered down at his wet jeans. No, Lyle thought nervously. Not even remotely.
Yes,
he lied, gesturing at the oak dining table.
Just lay the towel over the chair. It'll be fine.
After a moment of contemplation, Howard put his hands up, as if in surrender, and joined Lyle at the table.
I really appreciate this.
Nonsense. Just relax and try to get dry.
Lyle glanced at the kitchen then and thought of something.
You hungry at all? I cooked way too much pasta for myself tonight. There's plenty left.
Howard contemplated the notion.
Well, he said. No, I couldn't.
Lyle snapped his fingers and struggled up out of his seat.
You're hungry. I can tell. Just let me get in there and fiddle around with the microwave and you'll be all set.
His large guest looked as if he wanted to protest. Instead, he just grinned.
Keep it up and you might just kill me with kindness.
Lyle laughed uneasily at that and disappeared through the saloon doors.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As Howard ate his feast of spaghetti and garlic bread, the two men spoke of idle things. When the line eventually petered out, Lyle shifted focus to his guest, asking what he did, where he was from, and where he was going. Howard fielded the questions without hesitation, claiming he was single, had never married, and hailed from Salem, Oregon. By trade, he was a freelance writer, selling stories and articles to magazines and writing novels when it suited him, and had come down to Texas to investigate a string of recent murders that had occurred just outside of Austin.
I am working on a new suspense novel and figured, grim as it may sound, that this was the perfect opportunity to do some field research. Talk to the cops and the communities affected.
get a feel for setting and procedure and whatnot. Lyle nodded.
I suppose a writer must do such things to create an aura of authenticity.
100%. In fact, in terms of crafting a good yarn, next to tailoring the language so it flows smoothly, research is the most important aspect. He put his fork down for a second. An idea seemed to come to him.
You know, since we're talking about it, I wouldn't mind getting your opinion on the murders.
My opinion?
Sure, why not? Every little bit helps.
Sort of the common man's take on the whole sordid affair, eh?
Bingo.
Lyle shrugged.
Haven't really heard much.
He cut a glance toward his sparsely furnished antique-laden den.
As you can see, I don't own a television. Books are my entertainment. So about all I have to go on is the paper and the news on the radio. Last I heard, though, 6 people had been murdered, all in a similar fashion. 3 in Horseshoe Bay, 3 in Smithwick, I believe. Could be a serial killer, but nobody wants to say just yet. And that about covers what I know.
Howard nodded. And that's all about anyone but the police and the victim's family knows as well. Cops have put a pretty tight lid on things, which I assure you has driven the local media crazy and fairly much diluted the story's impact. Heck, outside of Horseshoe Bay and Smithwick, right now any copy you get is apt to be second page at best.
That's not always bad,
Lyle noted.
Howard looked up from his plate.
Prevents spreading the panic, you mean?
Exactly.
Stabbing an olive with his fork, Howard said,
Okay. So, what about you?
What about me?
What's your story, if you don't mind me asking?
Lyle leaned back in his chair.
Oh,
he said.
Oh, no, I don't mind.
He gazed up at the ceiling and ruminated over what to share.
Let's see. I was married for 45 years to my high school sweetheart, Nancy. She passed away 5 years ago, though. Drunk driver. Long story. Too private to go into.
Sorry to hear that,
Howard offered, his tone more automatic than sincere.
So was I,
Lyle said.
But that's life, isn't it? With the good always comes the bad. On that, my friend, you can bet the farm.
Amen.
But what else?
Lyle mused, moving on.
Ah, yes. As a writer, this might catch your interest. Before retiring some years back, for about 3 decades, I worked as a taxidermist.
Get out. Taxidermist? Stuffing animals, you mean?
Lyle smiled thinly.
I created lifelike representations of animals by using their prepared skins and supportive structures. At least that's the dictionary definition. Most people see it as stuffing animals, so yes, that's what I did. And before that, I spent some time in the U.S. Army as a medic. Spent some time in Vietnam and other places. Decided I didn't want to make a career of it, and separated in the late 80s.
Lyle turned around in his seat and motioned to an old family portrait framed on the wall behind him. He tapped his finger on a younger representation of himself.
You already know this fellow. Next to me there is Nancy.
He moved his finger along.
And this is my son, Evan. And here is my daughter, Naomi. Evan is an accountant in New York. He's got 4 children. Naomi lives up in Portland, Maine.
She's a middle school teacher. Two children and a mean old Rottweiler named Lulu.
Howard studied the photograph. Nice looking family you have.
Yeah,
Lyle said, his thoughts lingering on his wife and the accident. He sat stiffly in his seat. What a terrible, terrible night that had been. What a test. Careful not to let the memory swallow him up, he quickly pushed it aside and steered the conversation back to the subject of taxidermy, going into fine detail about the principles and techniques involved, even disclosing the fact that sometimes he used the animal's actual skeleton as internal support. Howard listened attentively while finishing his meal. When he was done, Lyle put the dishes in the kitchen sink, then suggested they reconvene in the den. Lyle sat in his reading chair and insisted Howard come sit on the sofa while his food settled. To their right, the fire Lyle had started earlier crackled and hissed within the house's stone fireplace. Howard stared into the fire's dancing flames and sat forward pensively.
"May I ask you something odd, Lyle?"
he said, a noticeable change in his tenor.
"By all means, Howard, ask away." "What's your opinion of those who commit serial murders?"
Lyle squinted at the man.
"That is odd, but I guess like everyone, I think they're reprehensible."
"I wouldn't say everyone. There's plenty out there who think murder is just fine."
Lyle's eyebrows knitted into a sharp V.
"Really? Like who?"
"Soldiers in war, which you obviously know something about. Someone defending their home. Religious extremists."
Lyle peered at his guest. The man's gaze remained transfixed on the fire.
"I thought we were talking about serial killers, Howard. Where they're concerned, I can't think of anyone, besides the mentally infirm, who think killing of that sort is good."
"Point taken. How about other types of killing, then? Do you think there are any justifiable types of murder?"
"Sure,"
he said.
"But the examples are few and far between. In war and for the protection of one's family, as you said. And in a few other extremely rare cases."
Howard's eyes glittered at this.
"Care to elaborate?"
Lyle, in fact, did not care to elaborate. Instead, he strategically turned the tables back on his guest.
"You know what?"
he said.
"I'm kind of interested to know what you, a novel writer who has to conjure up evildoers for your star detective to track down, think of true-life serial killers."
"Me?"
Howard said.
"Oh, I have a whole other perspective on the matter, as a writer."
"Oh?"
"To be perfectly frank, I find the serial killer more beguiling than reprehensible. There's just something, I don't know, remarkable about a person who comes to a point in their life where they honestly believe their purpose is to end the lives of others."
"I suppose nobody wants to read or write a dull book with dull characters."
"No, they do not."
Lyle fixated his attention on the big white candle on the coffee table in front of him.
"What about personally, then, as opposed to a writer?"
Howard rubbed his long jaw.
"It's hard for me to separate how I feel as a writer and how I feel as a person."
At that, an old familiar panic began to vacillate in Lyle's gut.
Come again?
"What I mean is, I find him utterly fascinating."
"Fascinating?"
Lyle said. He knew it was a useless question, but he asked it anyway.
"You're not serious, are you?"
"Quite serious. Mind you, I didn't used to think that way.
At one time, I agreed wholeheartedly with your view.
But not anymore.
Not for some time now, no. The big man replied, rising from the sofa. He walked over to the fireplace and squatted down in front of the flames.
A while ago, I developed this awful character that liked to befriend mentally handicapped kids, gain their trust, and then take them into the woods, slit their throats, and leave them to bleed out. Only, I found the development of this character troublesome. I didn't know the first thing about what it takes to kill, nor how to go about luring an innocent retard out into the woods. Sure, I could speculate all I wanted, but I really couldn't know what it was like. Not without proper research.
Lyle began fidgeting with his bony liver-spotted hands. The queer feeling in his guts worsened.
What sort of research? Boning up on published interviews with past killers. Going to prisons, visiting with inmates. That kind of crap. In its own right, it was all very informative, and I guess at that point I had enough data compiled to create a believable bad guy. But in the back of my mind, it still didn't ring true. So, I expanded my purview.
Lyle's heart flip-flopped in his chest. It was coming soon. He could feel it, as he always could.
More reading and interviewing, you mean?
He said. Howard rose from his squatting posture.
No. No more reading and interviewing. I moved past all that.
A spark ignited in Lyle's memory then, and he recalled something in the news some years back about several handicapped teenagers being found murdered in the Klamath National Forest in Northern California, close to Oregon. Howard turned around. His eyes were glossy orbs floating in their sockets now.
I educated myself. Changed my outlook on life and death. I drove down the coast. Took a ride. When I returned home, I was finally ready to develop my character. Ironically, I didn't end up going with my original idea. Dreamt up an all-new fellow, and went with him instead.
Seems wasteful,
Lyle said, though he didn't know why. But then he realized it was just something he had thrown out there while he tried to determine what he was meant to do here.
Not really. I had my reasons. Plus, I've been thinking that first character might work well in my latest novel. Timing seems right.
Howard turned, ambled over to the coat rack, and removed some sort of object from his coat.
I've also been thinking,
he resumed, burying whatever he had retrieved in his right front pocket.
After this trip, I'll have some great material for a future novel. I've already formulated a synopsis for it in my head. Care to hear?
Lyle barely registered the question. He was too busy puzzling over the small bottle-shaped bulge in Howard's pocket.
In recent days,
the big man went on,
I've managed to secure some very intimate details of these murders in Smithwick and Horseshoe Bay. For instance, were you aware that all six victims lived by themselves, and that all six were older men in their 60s and 70s? And that all six were found in their basements within a day or two by friends or family.
Lyle rose to his feet unsteadily. His doing so didn't seem to bother his guest.
And therein lies the basis for a new story,
Howard went on.
Broad strokes. There's this guy who enjoys showing up at these older men's houses. Perhaps making up some kind of story about how their car broke down up the road a ways, and they just needed to use the phone. And the old men, saints that they are, invite the guy into their homes,
let them use their phone, indulge in some pleasant conversation, maybe even feed them. Howard smiled. Though the old men don't know it, this guy has picked them out of a crowd at random. Say, from the Super Saver grocery in town. Then followed them home. Lyle swallowed. He had been at the Super Saver in nearby Marble Falls this afternoon, buying the pasta and sauce he had just fed this man.
But here's the thing, Howard said. This character, this killer, isn't a total loon. He's intelligent and thoughtful, and torture isn't his motive. All he really wants to do is practice his techniques of deception so later, when he finds a specialized interest that'll involve the utmost skill in deceiving people, he'll be prepared. Who knows, maybe he's an assassin for the government, or a hitman for the mob. Maybe he's something else, less cliché. I'll have to flesh that out when I come to it. Any which way, the character doesn't wish to cause the men any more suffering than necessary. So he brings ether with him to render them unconscious. And after enjoying a nice chat and a meal with his intended target, he knocks them out. Takes them somewhere secluded in the house, and then jabs a knife in the back of their skulls. Quick and easy. Howard's smile expanded into an almost brotherly grin. Like before, like always, a sickly uncertainty gripped Lyle. The moment had arrived.
So, what do you think?
Howard asked, moving towards him. Lyle's voice quavered.
Doesn't really matter, does it?
He said, scanning the den, searching for anything he could use to defend himself. The candle on the coffee table? No, too bulky. The poker for the firewood? It was propped up against the stone fireplace with the broom and the shovel. Out of reach, but close. Without thinking on it any further, Lyle lunged for the poker. Howard, moving quickly, pounced on him before he got two paces.
Oh, no you don't.
He laughed, wrapping Lyle up in a tight bear hug. Lyle fought for all he was worth, but between his elderly condition and Howard Staley's strength, he didn't stand a chance.
Let you in. Fed you,
he protested.
And I'm thankful for it. Italian's my favorite.
Howard tugged Lyle backwards, yanking him through the den. Lyle continued to fight, but it was a lost cause. He was too weak and too slow to help himself. Things moved fast then. In a blink, they were through the swinging saloon doors and lumbering into the kitchen. There, Howard pinned Lyle to the floor.
Give me a second here,
he said, tapping Lyle's head against the ceramic tiles. Dazed and inert, Lyle watched as a myriad of starry pinpricks danced all around him. Vaguely, he thought that this was very likely to end for him. Apparently, he misjudged the man's size and speed. He still had an outside chance to survive this, but unless it happened soon, he was done for. Howard took the small bottle of ether from his pocket.
Using this is an act of mercy. The problem is, I'm just not feeling very merciful tonight.
He slid the bottle back into his pocket.
You're my last one on this trip. I'm always hardest on the last. Sort of my M.O.
He glanced briefly to the left and browsed the kitchen's countertops in search of a knife block. Seeing none, he began tearing open drawers until he found one full of long cutting blades.
Ah,
he said, singling out a beauty with a 6-inch serrated blade.
You'll do fine.
On the floor, Lyle blearily attempted to push himself onto his knees, but it was a pointless endeavor. His head was full of helium, and his balance was non-existent.
All right,
Howard said, snagging Lyle's arm. Upsy-daisies.
With one stalwart tug, he hoisted Lyle to his feet.
Now,
he said, pointing to the door across from the sink.
This lead to the basement.
The attic,
Lyle said, swaying back and forth. If his murderous guest let go of his arm, he'd have gone down like a sack of potatoes.
Funny. What say we head down there for a short while?
Best not to,
Lyle murmured. The big man patted Lyle on the head like he was a child.
Now, don't you fret. It won't hurt much, I promise.
Not down there.
Yeah, down there.
Howard set the knife on the counter and with his free hand opened the door. The door swung inwards, exposing a tall rectangle of darkness breached only by the light seeping in from the kitchen. There was a light switch on the wall next to the door, but flipping it did nothing. Howard gave Lyle a hard shake.
Where's the light?
Lyle shook his aching head.
Down at the bottom. I have to yank on a string.
Howard grabbed the knife and guided Lyle forward.
After you, then.
They descended the steps slowly. Howard kept the blade pressed against Lyle's back the entire time. At the bottom, they stopped.
Where is it?
Howard queried, searching the darkness.
It's there,
Lyle muttered.
Reach out your hand. You'll feel the string.
The big man lowered the blade and let go of Lyle. He reached out blindly and waved his hand back and forth in the darkness. There the string was, as promised. He gave it a good yank, and a 100-watt bulb flared on, illuminating the basement.
Holy Jesus!
He exclaimed, flinching at the scene that greeted him. The place was filled with animals. Beavers, hawks, dogs, cats, a wolf, a bear, even a cougar. Seeing them, Howard's first thought was that they were all alive and about to attack, and he very nearly floundered back up the stairs. But his better sense promptly kicked in, and he recalled that Lyle had said he had once been a taxidermist.
Man,
he said, panning about the bizarre horde of lifelike beasts.
This is some crazy-ass shit, old man. Crazy ass. I can see why you didn't warn me.
His panning screeched to a halt when it reached the rightmost wall.
Fuck me,
he uttered, teetering between fascination and revulsion.
Fuck me.
The wall there was likewise lined with taxidermied figures. Only these were human figures. 12 of them. All male of adult age, and all naked with shriveled genitals and horrified expressions etched on their waxen faces. Each was fastened to a separate sheet of plywood by runs of rope and strategically placed nails, and each had cardboard signs pinned to their desiccated chests. One sign said child abuser, another said rapist, two others said murderer. Yet another said drunk driver.
What in the blue fuck?
Howard said, swinging his head towards Lyle. But Lyle was no longer beside him, nor was he splayed out on the floor.
Where?
The big man started to say when something cold and buzzing landed on his neck, biting him with electric teeth. He sputtered involuntarily, his whole body going rigid. As it did, all thought left his head. 3 eternal seconds later, the buzzing ceased, and he found himself collapsing to the floor. The concrete slab received him with a jolting embrace, and he began to spasm violently. When the spasm finally recited, Howard attempted to move, but his body remained incapacitated. Only his eyes were responsive. With them, he peered to his left and saw a figure looming a few feet away. Lyle, holding a small silver device that resembled an electric razor.
Gets you good, doesn't it?
Lyle said, admiring the device. A taser. He waved the taser in front of Howard's face to show him, then turned and shambled back toward an area behind the stairs. Disoriented, Howard watched as the old man approached a small wooden table. Atop the table sat a metal tray, which harbored an assortment of shiny tools. It was hard to say what the tools were from his vantage, but Howard had the sense that they were medical instruments, like a surgeon or a mortician might use, or maybe a taxidermist. Lyle set the taser down on the tray and exchanged it for a large scalpel, which he promptly toted over to where Howard lay helpless.
When you work in the crafts profession for 30-plus years like I did,
he said, going down on his hands and knees beside Howard.
It's impossible to quit just because you're retired.
Aghast and still unable to move, Howard desperately wondered how long the incapacitating effect would last. A minute? Two? Longer? Seeming to read his mind, Lyle said,
You're probably striving to figure out when you'll be able to get around again. Normally, with a man of your stature, it'd be about a minute. But not today.
Lyle leaned in and looked at Howard's eyes.
Yep, looks like it finally took. You didn't taste it, but I added an extra ingredient to your dinner. A derivative of a curare I actually get mail order from a fellow in Brazil, if you can believe that. Perfectly legal. I was hoping it'd take effect before all this to level the playing field. But as they say, beggars can't be choosers. The dose I fed you should keep you still for several hours, which should be long enough.
Lyle sighed and changed thoughts.
I've always enjoyed taxidermy. It's part of who I am, and as long as I can still use my hands, unsteady as they may be these days, I'll continue to make my representations.
He motioned to the wall to the right.
My pride and joy. An ongoing project of mine. A tribute, if you will, to the universe, to my God, or whatever you want to call it.
Lyle lifted the scalpel into the air.
They were all bad, bad people. Sent to me again and again. And if you're wondering, no. The one that says drunk driver is not the same one who took my wife. That fellow just ended up at my front door one night. Like you. Like all of them. Like others probably will.
Lyle glanced at something above Howard's head and smirked.
How about that? You fell in just the perfect spot. Right above your head is the drainage duct I hired a friend to install after Nancy died. Well, good. I doubt I could have moved you on my own if you fell somewhere else.
Howard struggled fruitlessly to scream. All that came out were gurgles. Lyle put his finger to the big man's lips.
There, there now.
His face softened. His tone became gentle.
Well, I can't promise it won't hurt. My old hands aren't as reliable as they used to be. Rest assured, I'll try my best to be as efficient as possible.
Lyle lowered the scalpel and cut away his guest's white t-shirt.
Ready now, Howard? Here we go.
His voice was steady, tender, unlike his hands. He set the scalpel blade against the crown of Howard's head. He figured he'd start with the hard work, like peeling the head off the skull, which was very difficult, and finish with the easy stuff. After a steady in breath, he began cutting. And that was Representations by W.B. Stickle. A good reminder to be kind to strangers. You never do know what someone's been through, or what their hobbies are, for that matter. For our next tale of the evening, we join Leonard Finch, a questionable protagonist on the verge of shitting his pants. I'll just leave it at that.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So again, from author W.B. Stickle, I give you Surfacing. On the verge of shitting his pants, Leonard Finch hurriedly locked the stall's door and wrenched his belt loose.
"Sweet Jesus!"
he exclaimed, yanking his trousers down around his ankles. His ass had barely made contact with the toilet seat when the first putrid volley came flying out. The force with which it did caused him to emit a comically loud sputtering fart. Had anyone else been in the men's room just then, Leonard was certain they would have found it impossible not to laugh. Not that Leonard really cared. The diarrhea fairy visited everyone from time to time, and when they did, it was always a noisy, smelly affair. With the initial volley having passed and the next one slowly brewing, Leonard executed a much-needed courtesy flush, then distracted himself from his toils by examining the funky collage of lewd drawings and cryptic epitaphs that covered his stall's puke-yellow interior. Out of all of it, and there was a lot, he was most impressed by the cadre of giant penises etched into the wall to his left. An artistic feat that he reckoned must have taken an incredible amount of time and effort.
"Bravo, my friend,"
he said, as he switched his focus to the back of the stall's door, which boasted a series of random sayings inscribed in perfect block lettering, via black Sharpie by the looks of it. Sayings like, "Not my circus, not my monkey. Bet you can't find all the cameras. Frottish party daily. It'll be here soon. And you're not as young as you used to be." Of these, Leonard found himself unusually fixated on the lattermost saying. Not because it was particularly strange or profound, it was neither, but because the subject of age had been on his mind a great deal lately. In just a few weeks' time, he'd be turning 60, a benchmark he had long associated with the start of old age. And once he crossed that stark threshold, there was no looking back, no fooling himself into believing he was at all youthful, in spirit or otherwise. Something that very much hurt his soul. "Old," he said, glancing down at the spare tire around his waist. Coupled with his many liver spots and array of aching joints, it was hard not to see himself as anything but that appalling word. Sure, he still had his good points, a full head of hair and the 8-inch dangler hiding in his trousers, but it was far beyond obvious that his best days were in the rear view. If he had had any doubts about this before, the last couple of days made it pretty damn clear. Not only had he blown easy grabs at every turn, his screw-up in Cape Girardeau had nearly cost him his freedom. If that cop who had been chasing him hadn't gotten creamed by that giant dump truck... Not wanting to think about the answer, Leonard swept the notion aside and refocused himself on the task at hand. 10 minutes and one more awful volley later, He threw in the proverbial towel and commenced cleaning himself up. Once everything was good and tidy, he rinsed his hands in the restroom's filthy sink and exited the small facility. Outside, the bright summer sun beat down hard, illuminating the world in full technicolor, a welcome contrast to the restroom's drab interior. Soaking it up, Leonard slowly made his way back to the rest stop's small parking lot, which he now observed was just as deserted as it had been when he first pulled in some 20 minutes earlier. Glancing about the place, something he hadn't had time to do on the way in, it was easy to see why. Between the graffiti covering the restroom's brick exterior, the dilapidated picnic tables and unkempt grounds that clearly hadn't been tended in quite some time, the place was a genuine fucking shithole.
"State tax dollars hard at work," he muttered as he approached his green Mark III van.
At the driver's side door, he hesitated briefly to stretch his back and pay deference to his sciatica.
"Be gentle, baby," he said, and climbed into the van.
A sharp twinge arced through his hips and to his legs when he turned to sit, but as usual, it faded as soon as he got himself situated.
"Not bad, not bad," he sighed, and fired up the van's engine.
The finely tuned V6 came to life with a roar before idling down to a steady purr. Leonard patted the steering wheel.
"Good girl. That's a good girl."
In the vehicle's center console sat a bottle of Coke, a pack of Twizzlers, an old pair of wire-rimmed glasses, and a blister pack of 500-milligram Tylenol gel caps. Wishing he had brought his bottle of Percocets, Leonard popped out two of the Tylenol caps and washed them down with a splash of Coke. After a follow-on splash, he extracted three of the licorice sticks and switched on the AC. The compressor kicked on with a sticky hiss and struggled to get itself going. Giving it a minute, he sat back and popped one of the Twizzlers in his mouth. The ropey confection's sweet licorice flavor tantalized his taste buds and took him floating back to the summer of his 13th year, when old Unky Herb first started bringing him into the barn to educate him on the intricacies of pleasure and pain. Old Unky Herb was never without his Twizzlers, and Leonard could still recall the man's sweet breath as he entered him from behind.
"Hurts a bit, doesn't it?"
Herb had said the first time.
"But it'd get easier, and even start to feel good, you'll see."
Old Unky Herb had been right on all accounts, of course. It had hurt a lot, and bled a lot too. But in time, Leonard got used to it. He even came to like it. Smiling at the memory, Leonard dangled a hand over the vents. Lukewarm air trickled between his fingers. Opting to give the AC a little longer, he turned his thoughts to home and ruminated on how good it would be to get back after this latest debacle of his. Yes, get home, grab a beer. Head down into the cellar and say hi to Sonya, Dylan, and Walter. Oh, the little tykes would be disappointed in his failure to bring them a new playmate. But Leonard would make it up to them. Maybe extend their time in the sunroom. Or treat them to some Mickey D's. Something nice like that. Leonard felt the air again. It was cool enough now.
"Atta girl," he said, and released the parking brake.
He was about to shift into reverse when a loud squealing noise erupted somewhere behind Leonard. Jerking his head to the right, he peered through the passenger side window and watched in amazement as a black 66 Mustang came barreling along the rest area's off-ramp. Fishtailing precariously, the car tore a jagged path across the asphalt and disappeared behind the van. Leonard snapped his head left and resumed following the metal beast as it came to a skidding halt across two handicapped parking spots.
"Sheesh, buddy," Leonard said. "Where's the fucking fire?"
"You know the answer to that," his inner voice chimed in.
"All right,"
he muttered, thinking of the reason he had stopped at this rest stop.
"Someone's got a case of the shits."
The Mustang's brake lights dimmed as the driver presumably put the vehicle in park. A few moments later, the passenger side door popped open. And, much to Leonard's surprise, a girl no older than 9 or 10 stepped into the bright sunlight. During his 60 years on Earth, Leonard had experienced a handful of instances in which time had literally seemed to stand still. The first had occurred when he was 10. At the time, he had been close friends with Danny Milner, who hailed from the impoverished Sundown Trailer Park. That summer, the two of them had found themselves in a contest of one-upmanship involving increasingly illicit "I dare yous." On the day of the time stoppage, Leonard had challenged Danny to steal an ice cream sandwich from the Circle K near the trailer park, a task he completed without issue. In response, Danny had dared Leonard to sneak into a neighbor's house and retrieve a pair of women's underwear. The house Danny had in mind belonged to a childless couple who had gone on vacation a week earlier. Deeming it an easy mark, Leonard snuck into the house's gated backyard and entered through its rear entrance, one of those sliding glass door jobs. Leaving it open, Leonard had paused to look around and get a feel for the house's interior. It was then that his eyes fell upon the living room's black couch and the massive, frothy-mouthed Rottweiler perched upon it.
"Oh, hello there,"
he had said, keeping his tone light and jovial. The creature had responded by baring its teeth and issuing a low, prickly growl. The sound sent pangs of unease shooting through Leonard's body and soul, and the whole world seemed to stop in its tracks. Things only started back up when the dog abruptly rocketed from the couch in Leonard's direction. By some miracle, he managed to retreat outside and slide the glass door shut before the animal could rip out his throat. A couple of years after that tense encounter, Unky Herb began taking Leonard out into his barn for his special lessons. The very first occasion, time had similarly ceased functioning. It was only when old Unky Herb had decided to pull back that the seconds began to tick forward again. Likewise, as Leonard presently stared across the parking lot at the girl who stepped from the Mustang, time once again seemed to grind to a halt. During the small eternity that ensued, Leonard simply ogled the child, taking in the fact that she was actually a couple of years younger than he had initially thought, 7, 8 tops, whilst also noting how oddly she was dressed. Instead of the typical t-shirt and jeans look, she sported a vintage red and white dolly dress, white stockings, ruby red slippers, and a head full of thick pinned curls held in place by a matching red bow.
"Heavens," he whispered. "She's perfect. Absolutely fucking perfect. Like a young Shirley Temple."
The sentiment set Leonard's imagination alight with possibilities, the most ludicrous of which involved him stealing her away from this forlorn rest stop. Stealing her away and making her his new princess. Sonya, his current princess, had proven herself unworthy of the role, and this child was the perfect replacement.
"Christ, Leo," his inner voice interjected. "Getting a little ahead of yourself, don't you think? You know you can't just snatch her right here, in broad daylight, right? With witnesses present and everything? Have you not learned your fucking lesson on this trip?"
"Yeah," Leonard replied, gripping the steering wheel so tight it creaked in his palms.
"I fucking have."
As he said this, the girl shut the door behind her, breaking the time spell, and took a beat to take in her surroundings. Though Leonard was too far away to determine her eye color, he could tell they were actively scanning the ill-kept grounds, cinder block restroom facility, and the large clearing that lay behind it. Evidently satisfied with what she saw, the child then scampered off towards the restroom, moving with a gait so fast and awkward it made Leonard's heart swell.
"I guess you're the one with the little emergency, huh?" he said, smiling at the thought.
The girl reached the restroom facility within seconds. No sooner had she disappeared inside, a highly implausible thing happened. The Mustang's brake lights brightened and dimmed, and the car moved away from the curb. Leonard assumed they were just relocating to a non-handicapped parking space, but then the car kept going and took the on-ramp leading back to the highway. Wondering what the fuck they were doing, Leonard began toggling his attention between the on and off ramps. Before he knew it, a full minute had elapsed and the Mustang still hadn't reappeared. Between the sixth and seventh minutes, the girl reemerged from the restroom. Leonard noticed that she had a victorious air about her and traipsed along the sidewalk with a notable spring in her step. She was snapping her fingers, too, and seemed to be singing to herself. As she drew upon the empty spot where the car had been, however, her newfound jauntiness swiftly withered away, devolving into outright confusion. Her face bunched up like an old woman's, and she swung her head back and forth, searching for the Mustang. Finding only the van, she scowled and transferred her gaze to the line of evergreens that stood between the rest stop and the highway. As she stared in disbelief, Leonard zeroed in on her petite mouth and discerned that her lips were moving. Curious to see if he could make out what she was saying, he lowered the driver's side window. To his dismay, the hum of it lowering pulled the girl's attention to him. She studied him momentarily, then started towards the van.
"Hi, mister,"
she shouted as she moved.
"Mister, did you see a car drive away a few seconds ago?"
Dumbfounded, Leonard struggled to articulate a coherent reply.
Yes, ma'am, I did. It took off a few minutes ago."
The girl halted about 8 feet away from the van and put her hands on her hips.
"He left? But why?"
It was a damn good question. Leonard bounced a few scenarios around in his head. Drugged out parent? A bad joke playing older sibling? A grandparent with Alzheimer's? But none of them washed true.
"Come on, Leo," his inner voice urged. "Forget all that shit we said before. The girl's a gift from the gods. Go get her. The old snatch and trank. Better do it fast, though, before someone else shows up. Tick tock, tick tock."
"Kinda risky," he murmured back.
"Sure, but look at her. So worth it."
Leonard considered it.
"Maybe she is."
"Maybe she is what?"
the girl inquired.
"Oh, nothing. I just say things sometimes and I don't know why."
For some reason, this made the girl giggle.
"Really? Me too. All the time, actually."
Leonard smiled awkwardly and changed subjects.
"Your dad, I'm sure he'll be back real soon. You want to wait here with me until he gets back?"
The girl crinkled her nose.
"My dad? No, that was Pete. And I don't think Pete is ever coming back. Nuh-uh."
"Why's that, sweetheart?"
The girl shrugged.
"Just a feeling."
Her eyes suddenly went glossy with emotion, and she looked as if she were about to go Niagara on him. Somehow, though, she managed to keep it together.
"Tough little cookie," Leonard mused. "That's good."
The notion ignited a warm feeling inside him, and all at once he decided to go for it. If he didn't, he'd regret it for the rest of his life, and that was no way to live. A rough plan was already forming in his head. Leonard hopped out of the van and slid the side door open. Within lay a seatless interior lined with a dark green carpet. In the very middle of it was a well-camouflaged panel that led to a small compartment where he normally stored his catches during transport. At present, the compartment was empty save for a large duffel bag, within which sat a box filled with syringes. Leonard opened the panel and retrieved a single syringe from the box.
"What you doing there, mister?"
the girl asked. Resecuring the panel, Leonard slid the syringe into his pocket and extracted a Coca-Cola bottle from the small cooler sitting behind the driver's seat.
"Just getting the cold sody pop, little lady. Such a warm day. You want one?"
Leonard held the bottle out to her. The girl regarded the beverage with a mixture of suspicion and intrigue. Well acquainted with the look, Leonard put on his most amicable smile. A critical moment was approaching, he knew. Whatever she decided about him in the next few seconds would go a long way in determining how hard or easy this would be. Her eyes danced from the bottle to Leonard's round face, then moved down, cataloging his beige polo, brown slacks, and ochre hush puppies. They lingered on his shoes before moving back to his face.
"Actually,"
she finally said, her countenance softening.
"I am thirsty, Mr.
Friendly," Leonard told her. "Jack Friendly, at your service."
It was the moniker he always used when trolling for newbies. It was pleasant, safe, and wholly welcoming.
"Your name is Jack Friendly?"
the girl asked.
"You're a silly bee."
Leonard chuckled. He liked that, silly bee. Exactly the type of thing a princess would say.
"It is indeed. And what's your name, Curly Sue?"
The girl touched her curly locks.
"I'm called Natalie,"
she said.
Or Nat for short."
She dropped her gaze to his pelvic region.
"Hey, Mr. Friendly, what's wrong with your pants?"
Leonard glanced down and saw that his crotch was jutting out like a tent pole. To ease the jutting, he turned around and pinched one of his testicles. A sickly pain shot through his guts and resonated in his kidneys.
"It's nothing,"
he gasped, wilting.
"Just these funny clown pants."
Gritting his teeth, Leonard closed his eyes and rethought his plan.
"This is it. You can't afford to wait any longer. She's suspicious now. You need to act before it's too late."
Able to see the wisdom in this, Leonard opened his eyes and launched himself at the girl. He was fast and true and thought for certain he had her. But the little shit managed to sidestep his advance and slip away.
"Whoa,"
she said, retreating to the curb.
"What you doing, Mr. Friendly?"
Snarling like a rabid dog, Leonard tossed the coat back into the van and made another attempt to lunge at her. Again, she evaded him, this time darting towards the restrooms. Leonard beat an angry fist against his leg.
"Fuck, fuck, fuck,"
he said, feeling as if he had already let the situation get away from him.
"No, no, this is good,"
his inner voice responded.
"Think about it. If she hides in the restroom, she's trapped and you're golden. If she goes anywhere else, though, like into the woods, then it's probably time to cut and run. Wait and see."
Leonard huffed and wiped the sweat from his brow.
"All right,"
he said. After a second to steady himself, he checked the on and off ramps for any sign of traffic. Seeing none, he resumed pursuit. Natalie was almost to the facility. A few feet before reaching the entrance, she hesitated and looked back at Leonard with a wan smile. Then she ducked inside the women's room, out of sight. Rejoicing at this, Leonard upped his pace. He was almost to the doorway when a shuffling noise emanated from the ladies' room entrance. A beat later, Natalie reappeared at the doorway, eyes wide and cheeks flush. Before Leonard could think to throw himself at her, she bounded left. As she did, she reached out and touched his arm.
"You're it."
Bewildered, Leonard swung a wild fist at her head but missed badly.
"No, you little shit!"
Natalie tittered like it was all some silly game and scampered toward the side of the restroom facility. Afraid she might make a break for the woods, Leonard summoned every ounce of energy he possessed and dove at her. It wasn't the most graceful of maneuvers, but it worked. Sort of. While failing to tackle her full on, he did manage to take out her legs and send her face first into the dirt, which was something. On the downside, he wound up colliding hard with the ground too, the force of which expelled all the air from his lungs. Red-faced and gasping, Leonard immediately rolled onto his side and looked at the girl, who lay less than 5 yards away.
"Didn't think I had it in me, did you?"
he said.
"But Mr. Friendly is full of surprises. You'll see."
Mumbling to herself, Natalie pressed a hand to her scraped chin and began to rise. To her knees first, then her feet. Drawn in a breath, Leonard reached out for her legs, eager to feel those white stockings against his palms. but the girl was too far away to reach. Seeming to realize this, she peered back at him and pointed at the woods.
Race you.
Leonard spewed a string of obscenities and hoisted himself off the ground. Natalie staggered forward and started for the trees. Her gait, however, was slow and shambling, and to Leonard's eyes it appeared as though she was favoring her left foot.
Ah,
he thought.
Diddums hurt your footsie wootsie.
Seeming to read his mind, Natalie called out in a playful tone.
Gonna beat you, Mr. Friendly.
The taunt made Leonard snarl like the Rottweiler from his youth and cast aside all reservations about heading for the woods. If the child wanted a race, fine. He'd give her a goddamn race. As long as no John Q. Publix came along to ruin everything before the two of them reached the cover of the trees, cover Leonard now realized worked in his favor. He'd find a way to catch her and win this little battle of wills. What was it his favorite fortune cookie had said?
With determination and a little luck, all is possible.
If ever he needed this to be true, it was now.
Just take care of the luck part,
he whispered to the fates.
And I'll take care of the rest.
So saying, he culled every ounce of determination he had left and set after his new princess. The fates, it appeared, decided to go easy on Leonard. He reached a tree line without incident and improved his pace to a brisk power walk. The denseness of the wood's undergrowth prevented him from anything faster. Natalie, for her part, had also increased her pace, but only barely. Her injured foot really seemed to be hampering her. As a result, the gap between them began to shrink. Amazingly, the girl didn't seem at all fazed by this. In fact, as she staggered between the pines and saw that she was losing ground, she actually started to lob more taunts Leonard's way, saying he was too much of a fatty fat to catch her and too stupid to know when he was beat. The taunts got to Leonard at first, but soon enough he tuned them out and focused instead on what he might do to her once he got her home. His thoughts was, after weeks of funning around with her, he would cook and eat her. Not in one sitting, though. He'd do it by inches. Keep her alive as long as humanly possible.
Come on, Daddy.
Natalie laughed.
I'm still winning.
The oddness of the girl's behavior was not lost on Leonard. Given her situation, being abandoned at a desolate rest stop and having a strange man chasing her into the woods, she should have been a crying, blubbering mess. But no, she was all giggles and insults. It was almost as if she didn't really understand what was going on.
You won't be laughing soon, my dear.
Natalie looked back and stuck her tongue out. She started to hurl another taunt his way, but just then the fates elected to do Leonard a solid. The instant she uttered the first syllable, her shoulder clipped a thin birch, which threw her off kilter, and sent her twirling round and round. On the third twirl, she tripped and disappeared from sight. When Leonard caught up to her, he was surprised to discover she hadn't gone into the undergrowth as he had thought. Instead, she had fallen down a ledge into a 20-foot-deep gully. Her slim frame was splayed across a bunch of rocks at the bottom, and her dress was fanned out around her. Her eyes were shut. To Leonard, she looked to be dead. After a quick break to catch his breath, he used the natural drainage channel to safely navigate his way down to the gully's bottom, then hopped across a narrow brook and trotted over to where Natalie lay. The girl was breathing when he arrived, and her eyes were open and blinking. He checked her over, assessing the damage. She had a seeping gash on her forearm and a lengthy scratch down her face to match the scrape on her chin, but otherwise she seemed okay.
Alive after all, he said. Such a tough little cookie.
What happened to me?
She asked.
You fell down, sweetie, Leonard said, squatting beside her. But don't you worry, Mr. Friendly is here to make everything all better.
You were chasing me,
she grinned, looking at him.
We were having fun.
Yeah, sure we were, Leonard replied.
Are you going to take care of me now?
Leonard arched his eyebrows. It was a very strange question, given the circumstances.
Why, yes I am, my lady. You're going to come home with me, and I'm going to love you plenty.
I'm not dead,
she said.
I'm awake. I'm waking.
Sure, honey, Leonard said. Whatever you say.
Another chance.
Leonard's eyebrows dropped and a cold realization came over him.
She's a freaking tard. That's what her deal is.
He sighed.
Well, at least she's a pretty tard. I can work with that.
We're going to go now, he told her. But I'm going to have to hurt you a little first.
Natalie sat up. Blood oozed from the gash on her arm.
You are? But why?
Rather than use his fist to put her out, Leonard searched the vicinity for a rock. He saw one by the brook and went to retrieve it. When he came back, Natalie was standing upright, her eyes blank, her mouth agape.
It's almost to the surface, Mr. Friendly. That's why they're scared. My foster mama. My foster papa. That's why they left me. I know things now. Watch.
There was a flicker of a movement from the girl, and a rapid whooshing sound, like that of a blade being whipped across the air, and Leonard felt something brush the left side of his head.
What?
He said as a flesh-colored object plopped onto the ground in front of him.
Whoa.
The girl murmured, eyes wide with wonderment.
Neat.
Before Leonard could ask her what she meant, an icy hot wave of pain rippled across the side of his head, dropping him to his knees. He lifted a trembling hand to the sight of the pain. Streamlets of red dribbled onto his palm. Aghast, he drew his hand away and watched as the warm red fluid ran down his arm and dripped onto the ground.
I'm bleeding, he said dumbly.
His gaze fell upon the flesh-colored object before him. This close, there was no mistaking what it was, a human ear.
Is that mine?
He muttered. Footsteps shuffled beside him.
I'm remembering again,
Natalie said.
Little bits. It's always like this, isn't it? Like waking from a dream.
Leonard craned his head to look at her. She was standing inordinately close and had her eyes on her left hand, which floated before her like a balloon. Something was off about it. Its digits were distorted and long, each stretching the length of a bread knife. As Leonard watched, they shimmied to and fro like dancing snakes.
I dreamed I could do this,
Natalie said, leering at the malformed hand.
I had lots of bad dreams, but I don't think they're so bad anymore. Not like I thought.
The hand reshaped itself. The shimmying fingers sprouted outwards, growing longer. They turned hard and flat, like real blades.
What the fuck are you?
Leonard spat. The girl's lips spread back, revealing a mouth of reshaping teeth.
I don't know,
she said. Her mouth became a large O. She no longer looked like a child. She looked like an abomination, sent to punish him for his sins. Sensing this was the end for him, Leonard quickly reminisced over his life. Overall, it hadn't been a bad one. There had been hardship and misfortune, yes, but there had also been good times here and there. The only regret he had was that after today, nobody would be around to spend time with the little ones. No one to go down into the basement and entertain them, teach them about pain, about pleasure, about how great it is to be wanted, just like Unky Herb had done with him in the summer of... Leonard didn't quite see the hand move. He saw it shudder, heard the whoosh of air, felt the pain, but he didn't see it make the actual move that sheared off most of his face. All he briefly saw was the girl's countenance bloom with fascination afterwards as the hunk of meat and bone that had been his nose and jaw went sailing into a nearby cluster of ferns.
"Surfacing,"
the girl whispered. A blinding flash of heat coursed through Leonard's head. Then the world went a brilliant shade of pink and Jack Friendly was no more. There was only the husk of a man that had once been Leonard Fisk, which promptly fell to the ground and became one with the forest. A time passed, then Natalie Warren emerged from the evergreens that bordered SR-87. She drifted out to the road's shoulder and faced north. The road was bright and sizzling in the afternoon sun. She surveyed its length looking for cars, but found it empty. She knew it wouldn't stay that way. Sooner or later, somebody would come and offer her a ride. She sat on the grass and brooded over what she had just done to that Mr. Friendly fellow. She had messed him up real good. Didn't even look human anymore. The animals of the forest would eat well tonight. How she had manipulated her hand like that, changing its shape, she wasn't sure. Well, that wasn't entirely true. There was a part of her, deep down but slowly rising, which knew how and why. She was changing. Of that she was certain. The change had been a long time coming, since birth. Not that she remembered much of the event. She knew she'd been born and then she'd gone to the orphanage. Pete and Judy Warren, her foster parents, had come and taken her when she was 2. They had raised her as their own, because Judy couldn't have kids. Living with them had been okay, she supposed. They had been nice and hadn't minded how sometimes she fell into daydreams and suddenly came out of them screaming to the heavens about needing to set the great fire that would signal the serpent's return. She'd been having such daydreams as far back as she could remember. In them, people were always hurt and dying, and for some reason this made her happy. The death of the Homo sapiens, whatever that meant. Judy had wanted her to talk about the dreams, but Natalie didn't think it was any of Judy's business. Judy, however, kept prying and prying. She even suggested going to see a specialist, which was why a month ago Natalie had been forced to think bad thoughts and send them into Judy's brain. Pete had been the one to find Judy's body in the bathtub. She had cut her wrists, and Pete had cried like a baby. Since then, he hadn't talked much to Natalie, just stared at her with strange eyes. Natalie knew he had grown frightened of her, just as all her classmates at Buford Elementary had after she whispered into Mikey Bozeman's ear and he ended up jumping off the school's roof. Then came this trip to see Pete's mother in Memphis. Pete had been jittery since Judy's funeral and said he needed to visit with family for a while. When they got in the car to leave, Natalie had sensed something hovering about him. Because of it, she made him promise not to leave her. Not until she was ready, whatever that meant. Pete had said sure, but he obviously hadn't meant it. He had abandoned her at the first chance he got. She should have expected it, she realized now. People were more intuitive than they seemed. They were smart and devious. They were the reason her kind had been divided so long. And that was why they all had to burn. If none of them were left, then there would be nothing to fight over. And everything could go back to the way it was, whatever that meant. Natalie stood and blinked her eyes. She thought she saw a glimmer in the distance. She hoped it was a car. The urge to leave this place and move on was more overwhelming than it had ever been. She felt the need to be around lots of people. The lower sort of people to begin with. The homeless, the dirty. The ones like Mr. Friendly, who would help start the fire. Perhaps this time things would be different. Perhaps this time nothing would stop her. Natalie squinted at the approaching glimmer. It was a car. A large one. Maybe a truck.
"Goody,"
she said, and stuck out her thumb. Well, if he didn't shit his pants in the beginning, he sure did in the end. See that? Full circle, baby. That was Surfacing by author W.B. Stickle. A little about old Stickle. W.B. Stickle lives in upstate New York with his wife and son and a crazy-ass plot hound named Bailey. His short fiction has appeared in over a dozen magazines and anthologies, and a growing number of those stories have been featured on podcasts such as Drew Blood's Dark Tales, which, of course, is his favorite. He's been working on a novel for the past 20 years and intends to finish it at some point within the current decade. He doesn't have much of an online presence, with Facebook being the only social media platform that he uses with any sort of regularity. It's also worth noting that after years of intense therapy, he's no longer afraid of Teletubbies, though he swears he will never, ever trust them. Thanks as always, WB.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend, but don't get too adventurous out there. The best adventures have you home in time for dinner. Here's a big hello and welcome to my newest patrons. Adriana Romano, Lindy the Cat Lady Beaumont, Jade Abudia, and Nikki Greenlasher. Thanks for becoming patrons, y'all. It means a lot to me. And if you haven't become a patron yet, go to patreon.com/Drew Blood. Go on and sign up and become a patron, y'all. What you got to lose? You've got everything to gain, baby. So Adriana Romano, Lindy the Crazy Cat Lady Beaumont, Jade Abudia, and Nikki Greenlasher. May the wind be at your backs, and may the road rise up to meet you. Never pass up a bathroom, and never ever trust a fire. Hey, unrelated, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and Superdeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.